institute housing during the period of if there was construction going on. You've spoken about this elaborately, at length, passionately, and written about this at great length. What's the latest?
Well, of course, those relocation return guarantees were never passed at the city council level, and individual contracts were never made with the tenants of the Dolphin and the Lee Apartments. And if you recall, when we were at the time when we were estimating how many households would need to how many units they would have to build to accommodate all the households that were currently at the Dolphin and the Lee, we were asking for 75 to 100 units be built to accommodate that population. Right now, according to these documents that I have from Mercy, they say that there are 158 people total living in those apartments. I don't see a breakdown for households here, but that's certainly considerably down from how many people were there previously. They say that of that, 27 households have indicated that they're interested in applying for the new units.
Now, this figure actually is in conflict with what I hear from a source inside the Western Service Workers Union, who has a number of members who are in the Dolphin and Lee Apartments. And that source tells me that the number of families is less than 20 that remain, maybe less than 10, and that they have essentially been bought off at the cheap rate of $5,250 for relocation money instead of the $42,000 that would really be available under, I guess, the state's new rules if such a project were initiated today.
According to this document dated January 16th, 2002, a report to the city manager, and it's from Cecil Cirillo, the director of the Redevelopment Agency, and according to this report, said that 74 individuals have voluntarily moved from the property. In addition, approximately 10 individuals have indicated desire to move out. So that's 84 people that will not be part of the new project.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry, my correction. At the bottom here it says 25 households have verbally indicated a desire to relocate temporarily, then permanently return to the newly reconstructed units.
So the number of people who've already left are how many people?
74.
So actually 74, that's
individuals.
That's about $340,000 in relocation money already given out. Of city money that could have gone for affordable housing and is actually going for them to pay probably unaffordable housing somewhere else.
Yeah, that's $388,500.
And it's also going to a situation where their affordable housing in the Dolphin Lee and the Dolphin Lee Apartments in the Rex Court is, well, the Rex Court's already been destroyed and the Dolphin
Lee
is slated to be destroyed.
There's no mention of Rex Court here anywhere. In fact, there's some sort of a peculiar thing where they say that the first property they acquired, and they're talking about the Dolphin. So it's as though Rex Court just never existed.
Yeah, the Rex Court, of course, was never bought by the city as a domicile. It was bought as an old Seaside Company property that was allowed to deteriorate. Although it had people in it as recently as a couple years ago, and this whole project has been on the Mercy Charities Housing Board and the City Council agenda for 5 or 6 years, really, if you want to go back far enough. But the main concern I've always had is that this does not increase affordable housing, and it also decreases the security of the tenants who are currently in what is, for them, affordable housing.
I actually have some good documentation about how affordable their current housing is. According to this report, it says that the average rent for the studio apartments is $494 a month. The one-bedroom units are having an average rent of $667 a month. And there is a one three-bedroom single-family residential on the property, and that rents for $1,000 a month. All of these would be considered to be extremely affordable housing for the city of Santa Cruz now.
Yeah. So what were the documents that you actually saw? That I guess there have been two that have been released. One has to do with the relocation costs, and the other has to do with the new qualifications, and that's another issue, of course, we haven't gotten into, but let's
finish.
Yeah,
I'll tell you about that. The document is called the
Relocation. Wait. Before we do that, though, let's work on the relocation. Finish up with that.
It is called the Relocation Plan for the Beach Flats Affordable Housing, Child Care, and City Community Center Project, Santa Cruz, California.
Uh-huh. Right. So the thing about the relocation, which I guess even SCAN, the group that elected the entire city council, well, much of the city council for the last 25 years, has supported, well, they've insisted that there be relocation and return guarantees for all the tenants there before there be further movement on the Dolphin Lee project. And, of course, this was blithely ignored by the city council, including Christopher Crone, the mayor, who, interestingly enough, sent me a copy of this report. Actually, he didn't send me a copy of the report. You have. He sent me a copy of a part of the report, which are the Mercy Charities housing qualifications. On the relocation issue, you know, there was a relocation agency. There was hired, I guess, Mecki Myers was hired a couple of years ago, and they couldn't find local relocation. They looked all over the place, right? That's what I understand. Did you have any sense of that?
Yeah, that is going to be difficult. Of course, now they're talking about only finding housing for 25 people or 25 households. That's going to be much easier to do than the 75 to 100 households that were there at the beginning.
And Scott Graham pointed out that there is no indication that the what housing they have found. Have they specified the housing they found, where it is, what it is?
They've surveyed what housing, rental housing is available in the city of Santa Cruz and what it costs. And they have sort of a table of what that would cost within a 10-mile radius of where the current housing is.
And they're assuming it's available, I guess we don't need to have the exact want ads, printed in the report. I'm just wondering.
No, they're just saying like a one-bedroom unit, the average rent is $1,100.
And they're suggesting that they're available as well as that's how much they cost.
If you have enough money, they're available.
I see. So they're saying that if you have this money, they'll be available, so they're available. Okay.
That's...
Now, the residents are living in these apartments right now, the Dolphin and the Lee, at least, no longer the Rex Court, but and they're living there at slightly reduced rents, or the rents are pretty much being stable under the management of Mercy Housing. How long is that expected to continue?
Well, that's interesting, because, you know, they already had affordable rents, but Mercy did lower the rent $50 a month when they moved in. I'm sure that as some sort of a goodwill measure to... help the people adjust to the new management. Of course, it was just, you know, taxpayer money they were giving them, so it wasn't like anything out of their pocket particularly. One thing, I cannot find anything. I know that we were successfully able to lobby that some of the entry criteria for the new housing be modified from what is standard for Mercy projects.
Now, this is the second thing that came out of the SCAN hearing and also the relocation advisory committee that the tenants themselves had a majority on that was eventually ignored and disbanded by the city council and dispersed by Yolanda Goda, who was the chair, which is that there was concern that the current residents, the Dolphin and the Lee, would not be allowed to come back because of either felony records, credit problems, illegal immigration status, and the city council assured everyone that every legal resident this would be able to come back, but they wouldn't put that into any kind of individual contracts, as you pointed out, any binding contracts. Yet there was, I guess, at the time that the Dolphin was given to Mercy Charities, in essence, the city bought it, or they gave Mercy the money to buy it, and then they transferred it back again. I'm not entirely sure where it is at the moment. But they, Mercy had kind of agreed, I guess they agreed informally, and the city council agreed informally that whoever was a legal resident, and that was, of course, a question whatever that meant.
Well, they said that anybody who was currently living there would be considered a tenant in good standing, and that they wouldn't have to look at their credit record, whether they had had unlawful detainers in the past. Their income is certainly important in terms that...
you have to be low income, yeah.
That you can't make too much to qualify.
And that, of course, puts some of these single men in trouble because they have families back in the countries they come from, Guatemala, Mexico, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and they were living together in cheap circumstances, five to a room sometimes, so they could send their money back to their families.
Mm-hmm.
They would not be allowed back into the housing, right?
Well, according to this report, there were six individuals who were considered over income.
Ah, so they were allowed back in. That's good.
Only six. But the vast majority of the people did fall into the low income or the very low income.
But there were other requirements, like not having a felony conviction, which I guess we, through our agitation, were able to get them to.
Well, I don't see any...
Or we weren't.
I don't see anything of that in this final report. I don't see anything about not considering felony arrest prior to a certain date. I don't see anything about them not looking at people's credit history. It all seems to have come back in living color here, that a negative credit report, poor housekeeping habits at your current housing can cause you to fail to qualify for the new housing, blatant disrespect, disruptive or antisocial behavior.
Could that be like blocking the sidewalk, perhaps?
Perhaps. Let's see, overextension of monthly obligations. That means like if you have a certain income, but you have a lot of bills for that.
Understand. These are new requirements for getting back in. The people that supposedly are going to be, if not guaranteed, given the infamous, quote, first preference to get back in,
uh-huh.
are now being saddled and burdened with more requirements?
That's correct.
Wow.
And let's see, they had other. I think they had some things about criminal behavior too. And here it is. Applicants will not be considered. Applicants will not be considered to have a poor history of tenancy when records show minor lease violations or criminal offenses, which do not include physical violence to persons or property, domestic violence, sales of narcotics, illegal weapons possession, any form of assault, breaking and entering, and burglary.
So there's no time limit on that. There was supposed to be a time limit, starting with, I guess, when the property was transferred, or possibly even when the project was started and the property was demolished. And has the project been started?
It says persons spending more than 45% of their household's income may not be accepted.
Has the project actually been started? Is this a Dolphin Lee project? Is it not? What's their latest spin on that?
Well, I was trying to find some information about when they're saying this project started. And they are going back to 98-99. I mean, they mentioned both years, and they don't really give a date for when it started, but they do refer to the Relocation Advisory Committee meetings that were held back in 98, I think it was.
No, there were no, that was 2000 that the Relocation Advisory Committee meetings were held.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting, Becky. We're talking with Becky Johnson, writer on the issue of the Dolphin Lee project, the attempt to dump all the affordable housing money, well, the attempt, the I guess it's the established coup here, although I guess they ran into funding problems and they sent somebody down to either to Sacramento or Los Angeles somewhere to lobby so that they could shore up their funding sources because there's been a change in the state law. What's happened with that?
Yeah, well, yes, Pretty much everybody knows there are no schools in the Beach Flats area. And the new federal guidelines for delivering these income tax credits that translate into dollars for building these affordable housing projects are given priority to sites that are located near the schools where the children attend. And this is not a particularly good site for that, and they're afraid that they will not qualify under the new guidelines for this funding. And as I said at City Council, I hate to see the project dumped for that reason. When
although that you would have thought they should have thought of this, and also where are the kids going to go to school when they're being relocated, scattered all over the area. One of the things that former Mayor Fitzmaurice, who has been the chief booster of this project, was saying is that we are having this project to keep together a Hispanic community.
Well, they can't really say that. I mean, if 74 people have already left, 10 more are going. The only 25 households have indicated that they're even going to apply for the new housing. Yeah. Then they have all this new set of criteria to determine whether the people who are applying are going to be eligible.
Right, even beyond that, though, Becky, I mean, if during the period of time when this project is being built, they have to raise the existing buildings so that they're destroyed, and then they have to build this whole new thing which blocks off the street. These people have to find this alternative housing that you mentioned they claim is available. But they're not going to find it all in the same area. This whole community will be dispersed for at least a year while this project is built. So it's completely, I mean, it's this whole thing seems, it's based on false statements is what's bothering me, among other things.
I think that they, since they've managed to eliminate enough people, they've gotten it down so that there, since they only have to relocate, a fraction of the original community that they were talking about, that they are going to be able to do that.
Well, what I'm saying is that while they relocate them, they will not keep them as a single community. They'll be scattered all over the place.
That's true, and wherever those new housing is, that it's very unlikely that the children will be able to continue to attend the schools that they're in now. They'll have to transfer to the schools that are in the district wherever they move to.
Mm-hmm. Well, on another subject, is there more you want to say about this Mercy Housing stuff?
It just looks to me like they've gone back on their promises about this criteria, that the few things that we had lobbied for and had exposed that, that the people that they were supposedly building this project for would not qualify for the new housing. They made those changes, we thought, or they said they did, and now that they're coming out with this replacement housing plan, those changes are no longer in there. The criteria for Mercy, and it is Mercy...
Mercy Housing?
Mercy Housing Services, I think. Mm-hmm. Mercy Services Corporation, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the management end of Mercy Housing California. They dropped the charities part.
Oh, that's
probably
good.
No doubt because they don't contribute a dime of funding.
Truth in advertising, at least.
The charities was definitely...
Neither charity, now they can drop the Mercy, we'll be all set.
They should drop the Mercy.
I'm
sure some
nice.
People might... consider that word to be inappropriate as well.
How about monopoly housing? That might be more appropriate, since they are the only one that the city council even considered, and they're the one essential affordable housing provider in the city that the city always goes to and that controls city deliberations.
Uh-huh. There are just also some ominous things in this criteria that make me, I don't know, it just leaves so much wiggle room for... Mercy Housing Corporation or Mercy Services Corporation to deny admission to people that they don't like. They'll deny admission to applicants whose habits and practices may reasonably be expected to have a detrimental effect on the operations of the project. Who
I guess they're not going to let me in.
Your habits and practices?
So much for Nena Ruiz, huh? We had a Residentes Unidos in the old days.
The Mercy Services Corporation will screen each applicant household to assess their suitability. Factors to be considered in the screening are their housekeeping habits. You know, when I go to apply for housing at a for-profit management company, they don't come out to my current house and look and see if my house is clean.
Of course, you also wouldn't be getting a guaranteed rent at 30% of your income.
Well, that's true. That's true, but I mean,
But you know, I wonder if the...
It's a public agency that's way more intrusive than a private agency.
Well, what I'm interested in knowing is, did this public agency inform all the people that they talked into this, into not opposing this scheme directly, although many of them did initially, and they were dispersed by all kinds of means, such as illegally dissolving their negotiating committee and so forth. But did they know that they were going to have to expose their housekeeping and...
Their rent-paying habits. Now, that one's reasonable. People want to know if you pay your rent in a timely fashion.
But your
credit records, those weren't supposed to be considered for this project.
In fact, I heard Mercy Charities officials assuring people that they would not that those were not an issue.
Yeah, that they considered the people who are currently housed to be in good...
We expected that there was going to be some kind of double dealing like this, which is why, and I think that residents also wanted these guarantees of no barriers like this put in the way before they agreed to enter into any kind of project. But the city council wouldn't hear of it and rammed this project through.
They're also considering their prior history as a tenant. This is going back 5 years.
That was another thing they were not supposed to consider. Their record of potential evictions, let's suppose they got into disputes with their landlord,
uh-huh.
That was not supposed to be consideration. I think that Elizabeth Vogel and possibly later this activist who worked with Tony Madrigal was assuring me that was not a consideration. You remember her?
Yeah, and not only do they need to report who their last landlords were for the 5 years, which is kind of basic on a form, but they also have to provide written references from all their former landlords, which would be difficult for anybody to go back and find your former landlord and get them to write a letter of reference for you.
See, but it seemed to me that if you're talking about a Hispanic population, some of whom is illegal, mm-hmm. some of whom came from countries where they may have even been facing repression, they're not in a position to provide this kind of documentation.
That does seem difficult. They're also considering people's criminal records.
That, I suppose, I'd heard they were not supposed to consider, at least beyond a certain point.
There's no
time
indication
limit.
In here that that's
well,
anything
I,
that
this
they're
this sounds like
willing.
It requires someone to get in touch with Huff to assist you or someone else in doing a write-up of this situation. This is, another betrayal by Mercy Housing, another sellout of, and essentially this is the sellout of the people of Santa Cruz because we are paying Mercy Housing to do all this stuff.
Also, if anyone was evicted at any time during the past 5 years for non-payment of rent or had other legal action initiated for actions within their control.
Maybe what we can do is get Eleanor Foresta and Robert to step in. These are, of course, the couple that won against Mercy Charities Housing's attempt to evict this disabled couple from, actually a disabled woman and her caretaker from the Sycamore Commons, and that they won this last month. Maybe we should get a little action going there. But again, it's so much David and Goliath stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
We're just in the midst of this huge megalith, this huge juggernaut moving forward.
Here's another one. You have to submit all of your current documentation of your ability to pay rent, which can be no less than 8 months' worth of records of your income. And when you apply, you have to have exactly the same household members listed on the application as the ones that who have contributed to the household's history of paying their, paying rent. So that means it eliminates people who are forming a new household or changing their existing household. For instance, I have a 21-year-old son who would very much like to move out and get his own place. And, as soon as he's financially able to do that, he probably will. But that would make me ineligible to apply for Mercy Housing, for 8 months, basically.
Now, why would that be?
Because I would have changed my household composition, and my ability to pay is based on what my household is with him in it, my son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another hurdle, another...
I hope you itemize these hurdles, or somebody does, in terms of a, you know, a clear kind of...
And let me just finish up with one more thing.
Sure.
And that is that some people will be have too little income to qualify for this project. It says here, to protect the project from rent loss and rent delinquency, persons spending more than 45% of the household's combined monthly income for rent may not be accepted.
You know, this could be the reason that Mayor Crown sent me these guidelines. Maybe even he is finding the stench of this a little too hard to bear. Perhaps a quick phone call.
Or maybe he never read them.
Or perhaps he wanted somebody else to do the work, as usual. Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Becky, you also are a broadcaster on Club Cruise. You do a twice weekly show. You are, in fact, the producer of Club Cruise.
I am the big cheese.
Well, what's the flavor of the week coming up there, Becky?
Let's see, the 12th and the 14th, we have a show, and, I'm sorry, I can't give you that information right now.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you've been working on is Huff questionnaires. That's where you actually go out in the so-called coffee clatch, not the one where you get arrested for simply trying to lobby council members legally during office hours. I didn't say arrested, I say enjoined, actually, is the word. And you beat that injunction last year. But it's another coffee clatch where you go out to the homeless services center, serve hot coffee, and inquire as to how things are going, who's getting, who's doing well, who's not, what's cooking. And I guess you've come away with some 50 or 60 questionnaires answered. You're getting some data out there?
Yeah, well, we originally were trying to document how many people were being turned away from the National Guard Armory because they don't have photo ID. And that was kind of our initial thought. But it's always good for a homeless organization such as Huff is to have that direct input from homeless people on what's going on for them on the streets and how they're getting along, what kind of problems they're having, how they're interfacing with social services, with, say, the downtown hosts or the police, whether they camp out, and if they don't use the social services, why they don't use them.
No, I actually,
those sorts of things.
I actually have some interviews. I'm about to play one or two of them before the... We have about another half hour in the show. Are they playable? I actually haven't been able to review.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think they're not very long, maybe 10 minutes of interviews with like about three or four people.
Yeah, are you interested? Do you think that you'll be doing another coffee clutch on Friday?
Coffee clutches are a bit sporadic, but we do try to do them from time to time.
And this is another Huff project, which I think that, would you be interested in having some help on that?
Oh, absolutely. If anybody who wants to wake up really early in the morning and go down and stand in the cold there with the homeless people when they come back from the buses, from the armory and the church programs, and it's pretty darn cold out there in the yard waiting for the services to open up. So we come down with our some hot coffee, generously donated by Baker Square,
mm-hmm.
and then we can thaw out in the morning, and people will speak to us pretty readily under those circumstances, and we can get some indication. I did talk to one of the monitors, and he told me that the armory is closing March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that he's the ultimate
authority
source on this, but it could well be.
I'm going to make a few more comments, and we're going to roll into a few of those interviews you had last Friday. If people want to reach you, they certainly can leave a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, if they want to be out for this coffee clutch, which just happens at 7 in the morning on various weekdays.
Or they could give me a call at my home phone,
mm-hmm.
and that's 429-8529.
And that's Becky Johnson, the only one in the book, right?
I am the only Becky Johnson listed in the Santa Cruz telephone directory.
I think one is quite enough. Thank you very much.
I think there are more Becky Johnsons than just me, but I'm the only one listed.
Listen, thank you, Becky, and maybe next time we can get a report on such situations as the finding of the body of Darla Gafford of Santa Cruz. outside the city limits who died, I guess I was in the Soquel area.
Was that an overdose?
Yeah, supposedly an overdose.
Yeah.
Let's talk more, and...
Okay, and I'll be, I hear that you're going to be playing some of that KSCO interview that we've been talking about.
If it gets to the studio on time, I will play a little of the dreaded KSCO.
I believe it is on its way.
All right, well, thank you.
I'll look forward to hearing that.
All right.
And it is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're tuned to 427-3772 is the call-in number. City Council meets tomorrow, as does, I think, the Citizens Police Review Board will also be meeting in the afternoon. I don't go to those anymore. They start at 5:30. I do recommend people file complaints with the Citizens Police Review Board, and I sometimes talk about upcoming meetings. And I've actually had a few meetings with some of the new board members, but they seem so generally hopeless to me, and the board seems so mired in its unwillingness to challenge police misconduct or even hold a public hearing that I don't have much to say except people file a complaint, tell them to put it in a public file, ask for an independent investigation and a public hearing, and then if you really want to do something about it, find an attorney and or hold a press conference and do some activism yourselves. And again, that's the Police Control Project. If you want to call Huff on that, we're interested. 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's also the off-air line if you want something on the air on free radio that has to do with homeless matters that would show up on my show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. You can leave a message there at 423-HUFF if you got stuff on the show that you think that you'd like to... it's a point of view you think that should be represented on the show. Wow. Again, the peripatetic Jeff has returned with num-nums. There's also on February 14th at 8:30 a.m. at 701 Ocean, that's the court building, Jerry Henry. His case returns. Jerry Henry, and we'll be talking about his case on Thursday at greater length, they're doing to me what they did to him, which is to drive him away using the complaint that he was interfering with a business, just as they're using the complaint that I am interfering with a business, that the blocking of the sidewalk is sort of interfering with Matisse's ability to privatize the sidewalk. I'm not blocking the sidewalk, and he is privatizing the sidewalk, but that's another story. We'll be talking about that on Thursday. And we'll also hopefully get in touch with Kate Wells. We'll hear an update on the Capitola Officer Murphy, Blue Lagoon, and the attack on the Blue Lagoon by the Santa Cruz Police Department. What's happening with that? Their lawsuit. The David Silva case, where Silva was dragged out off from City Council under Mayor Sugar's mayorship.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, how you doing? I wanted to call to see if it was if I could discuss what's going on with immigrant workers at the airport, particularly the Filipino airport screeners.
You got about 5 minutes. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. The situation after the 9/11.
Before you say who you are and who you're calling, you know what your situation is.
Okay, great. My name is Kawal Ulanday.
Uh-huh.
I'm with the Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines.
And where is that based, Kawal?
We're mostly up here in San Francisco Bay Area.
And you actually are making a long-distance call to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Of course.
Have you been listening to our show, or...?
Occasionally, and I understand you guys stream, and there's some online folks that I know that are online
but
right now.
But not today, I guess.
Yes, today.
Well, you have been listening.
You're not streaming today, is that what you're saying?
Oh, we are streaming today.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. They're listening through their computers.
Cool. Well, give us your updates.
Sure. There was a recently passed Security Aviation Act by the federal government that will make these airport screeners have to be citizens. Which is going to mean a mass layoff of immigrant workers in an attempt to kind of blame these workers for some of what happened on 9/11, that it was their fault that these box cutters got on the planes. And it kind of just feeds this anti-immigrant hysteria that we're in right now and also puts smoke in front of some of the real reasons why we were having to worry about these kinds of terrorist acts happening at the airports. And just wanted to say that the Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, along with a lot of other organizations, particularly one where there's members in Santa Cruz called the All People's Coalition Against U.S. Terror and Occupation, they've been supporting us in trying to fight to protect the jobs of these immigrants, taking a strong stand that immigrants or citizens all have the right to have a job, to have a home and food on the table. And that this law, which will displace so many immigrants who are in this job, just so happens that this airport screener job is one of those low-wage, immigrant-targeted jobs. We really want to protect their jobs, show that this law is irrational, that if they want safety, that you should keep the most experienced people and give them the training and the pay raises that all these new citizens are about to get as they fill in these 28,000 positions nationwide.
Now, have you heard about the upcoming 5 o'clock march on February 12th to demonstrate against the detainees and the terrorism war around the U.S. Patriot Act at the confronting Oakland City Council and gathering at 7th and Broadway, marching to City Hall at 12th and Broadway? Have you heard about that?
Exactly. I'll be speaking at that event in the council and at the in front of where they're detaining the detainee center in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
Part of what the message will be some of the airport screeners' rights are, along with when you talk about terrorism, what's happening in the Philippines right now, which is the second Afghanistan on Bush's so-called list of the war on terrorism.
You've got 2 minutes to run that one down.
Yes, sure. So we're going to be out there in Oakland. I'm glad you put that out there. The Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines is going to really send a strong message, really revealing the truth behind why the U.S. troops, Special Forces troops, this is Green Berets and Rangers and like this, why are they in the Philippines, so-called, looking for this Abu Sayyaf group, who is located in a very southernmost island, but yet the military has deployed throughout the archipelago of the Philippines. And just in the last minute to say that what we've seen about the history of U.S. intervention in the Philippines in terms of the military is from the turn of the century, where they wiped out 10% of the population in the Filipino-American War under the name of liberation, and a constant history of intervention that has been touted as the thing to solve the problems in the Philippines. But yet what we see are the worst living conditions, the weakest peso, the highest joblessness and highest landlessness at this time there. So we really look at the intervention of U.S. military as clearly not a solution to the root problems of the Philippines.
So how can people get involved or get more information? And again, we were speaking with...
Kawal Ulanday.
Kawal?
The Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. We have a general email that I'd like to put out.
Sure.
It's CHRP, that stands for Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, 100@hotmail.com. So that's CHRP100@hotmail.com. If there are Filipinos or other supporters that want to know and get more involved with screeners and the anti-war efforts, please email us and we'll get right back to you.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for phoning in and giving us this update, and maybe we'll try to get some info on what's happening with homeless folks in your neighborhood next time we talk.
Yes, because if this immigrant thing happens in the airports, there could potentially be a lot of homeless people. So I'd like to thank you for having us on.
Thank you.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're dashing to finish off the last of Bathrop Spears' broadsides before dashing down to the planter to check things out down there. I think we're going to allow Jeff 30 seconds starting right now. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, this is an announcement of a drive to urge the California Department of Corrections not to take away the fundamental human right of families to visit their loved ones in the prisons. Stay tuned to Bath Pierre's broadsides and forthcoming sessions, and I'll give you the update, but basically March 8th is the big day. There's going to be a caravan to Sacramento and an emergency call-in to Department of Corrections officials, reminding them that the right to visit their loved ones is a basic human right, especially for Mexican-American and African-American citizens.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. Well done. Now let's hear a little bit from Homeless Services Center, an interview that happened last Friday.
Okay, and this is February 8, 2002, and we're out at the Homeless Services Center, and we're talking to...
Eric.
And Eric, you sleep out of doors at a nearby but undisclosed location. How was it last night?
Cold and wet, and there's no safe place to sleep dry in this county unless you want to get arrested. And so we have to resort to urban tactics like sleeping in doorways and sleeping where people don't want us to be. And it's not fun.
Were you sleeping alone or do you sleep with a group of people?
I sleep alone. I'm a loner. It's easier that way because the doorways are very small.
And what do you think about the sleeping ban?
Well, sleeping ban sucks. And a lot of the homeless people aren't bad people. They just need a place to sleep. And I think it's really wrong of the city to make criminals out of us when most of us are highly intelligent and artistic human beings who need a hand, not a handout. So, yeah.
Thanks, Eric. Hi, we're at the Homeless Services Center and we're talking to
Daniel Reynolds.
And Daniel, I hear you had some trouble with your car.
I got in an accident and didn't have my insurance paid up, so they impounded my car, my license suspended, so I haven't been working since I lost my car.
And what kind of work were you doing before you lost your car?
I was working through Liberty, doing whatever they asked you to do. Just working every day, showing up at 3:30 in the morning, so I can make sure I'm first on the list to go out every day and make sure I make money.
And you can't work for Labor Ready without your vehicle now?
It's a lot harder to get out without a vehicle. If you have a vehicle, it's easier to get out and get it, you know, to get jobs. And you're usually, like, they go by, you know, vehicles that are first showing up at the job, and then they call the people vehicles, and they'll take a couple of extra people in their vehicles that don't have cars. But it's a lot harder if you don't have a car to get out.
Now, are they paying living wage jobs there that was like, was it $12 an hour?
No. No, they paid like $8 an hour. I worked for this remodel in Rite Aid. We did two of the stores, and the whole time I just got paid $8 an hour. But I got a lot of overtime with them, so I wasn't complaining because I was getting a lot of overtime with Rite Aid.
Okay, thanks.
Hello. Well,
okay, we're talking to your monitor at
Charles,
the Armory.
Yeah, I'm Charles.
And Charles, I wanted to ask a question. How come, why do you think it is that the church groups and the ISSP program are always full and the Armory is almost never full?
Well, the reason being is the availability of the church groups. A lot of people get meals at the church, whereas the Armory, there's no meals that are served. It's just a sleeping space. But the Armory overall carries as many, or not more people than the church groups combined.
Yeah, I think it's considered full at 75, but it can accommodate 100 people without too much trouble. But is, you know, like, how many people did you have last night?
We had 60 plus.
And you were expecting more because?
Well, we were expecting more because of the inclement weather, anticipation because of the rains coming down. But there are a lot of people that don't want to be in the system of ISSP or a church group. They want to be on their own. You know, they want to regulate their own time, their own hours, when they get up, when they go to bed, et cetera, et cetera. Excuse me.
All right. Thank you, Charles.
Sure.
All right, so I hope that wasn't too much static on the air since I left the mic on, but I think you probably got most of the Becky Johnson's interview with a couple of people out at the Homeless Services Center. Good interviews. I wish we had time for more. Right now we have on the line Santa Cruz Service Corps member and Camp Paradise co-founder Larry Templeton. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How's everything out there at the Service Corps?
Well, the Service Corps is going all right. We're still doing a bunch of free work.
And getting your asses trashed by KSCO bigots, sounds like.
Oh, yeah, yesterday, you know, that's a bunch of bullshit. Here they give you the opportunity to call in and talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you go in there and talk, and they want to talk all this smack, Kennedy. All you guys, I know you guys are listening to this station because everybody wants to hear what Robert has to say.
Yeah, I wish they were.
I hope they are, because this is Larry Templeton, and I'm saying it right to your face, Kennedy. You made an appointment yesterday to really slander homeless people. You know, you're a backstabber, pal. You sit there and talk all your smack in front of people, then you want to backstab them. Then you hung up on me yesterday because I was talking about stuff. You were talking about $6,000. Well, Robert will let me talk about it. This city gave $6,000. It wasn't even, not $6,000. That's just an estimated cost because they don't want to do nothing by the right figures. It was an estimated cost of what the city did. But we
didn't
ask them.
Talking about the city cleanup, right?
Well, no, the city motel vouchers.
Oh, the city motel vouchers,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
We never asked the city for that. That's an offer they made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they made that to Pauly. They didn't make it to me. $6,000, that's pretty good. All right, your stupid city, Kennedy, paid $80,000 for a damn sign. Now you guys are talking about tearing it down.
I remember.
Who talks about wasting money?
What's coming up that people can help with at Santa Cruz Service Corps? I know Camp Paradise has often been saying it's going to
become Camp
Paradise.
Yeah, well, every time Camp Paradise gets ready to set up, you know, we don't we right now we're having problems getting vehicles licensed. Every time we talk about trying to set up, we get a lot of slack. I mean, there was for 4 days when I said I was going to set up, mm-hmm. I was followed by every cop in this town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I said, you know what? Let them follow me. So I went for a very long walk.
Well, I think that you know, it's going to be a natural thing. The police are going to follow a camp that sets up, but what you need to do is have enough local people with you that...
Yeah, I don't know if anybody knows, the other day I just became, we are part of another camp now.
Oh, really?
They are legal. And
Dignity Village?
Yes, they are.
In Portland, Oregon?
We are a family now.
Oh, good.
We're going to send two of our guys up there, two of their guys are going to come down here. And they're going to help us set up a camp here with the same laws they have up there in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And now Santa Cruz is saying they can't do it. Well, Portland did it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how can folks get in touch with you?
They can call me right here at the Santa Cruz Service Corps number. I'm here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They can call me clear up to about 10 o'clock at night, then I'm gone from here.
And that's 423-8636.
Yeah, and if anybody has any ideas, I mean, useful ideas. You know, everybody keeps talking about the areas that they used. Well, those areas that the city council talked about was just ways that they could drag their feet and drag this out long enough that you folks would back away from us.
Mm-hmm.
We're still doing the same work we've always done. Yeah, right now we don't...